Again there, folks. So I've recently been reading Richard Adams' book Watership Down, which I'm sure many people will be familiar with from the brutal and bloody cartoon from about 1979, which certain people of a certain age grew up on and were traumatized by. I also covered Watership Down, the film, on Classic Movies many years ago, but I've recently been reading the book itself. Not for any particular reason, just from your own sort of personal enjoyment. And I found that it's actually a lovely ode to the English landscape. I think it's beautifully written, and I think it evokes these kinds of this pastoral English bliss. I also love that the way Adams uses words like for weeds and plants in the English countryside, like fogwort and fleabane and goosegrass, milkwort. And so you really get into this, like almost like this archaic soul of the English countryside, which is why I wanted to read it. I think it's great. I think it's beautiful. But there's a lot more to it than that. And in actual fact, I'm quite surprised that in terms of sort of fantasy and fictional books, Watership Down is so often overlooked. People tend to think, yeah, it's a brutal cartoon, but there's not much more to it. And I actually find there is a lot more to it than that. And it doesn't get the attention that it deserves. So on this recent reading, I was kind of going through it again just enjoying the sort of the description of the land and the countryside. And I'm familiar with the story. I'm sure, just to recap, it's about at the beginning of the story, a warren called Sandleford is destroyed, and a rabbit called Fiver has visions and he sees the future. He gets a bad feeling about it, but then he's not listened to and he's fobbed off, and there's a group of rabbits flee, and then the rest stay and they all die. And so the main kind of gist of the stories is almost like an odyssey of rabbits looking for a new home. But Adams has imbued the prose, the story, the narrative with some quite deeper themes. He's developed an entire mythology and religion for the rabbits, and then throughout it all, played around with that, as he puts them through the wringer, to be honest. It's quite, it's famous for being quite brutal. But also he explores some deeper concepts, I feel, which are in the film as well. The film's great. I'm not doing the kind of you should read the book and just, the film's trash and all of that. But it really jumped out at me because when I was reading his prose and the way that he describes certain parts, he writes differently depending on the setting. It isn't just he's trying to do something a little bit different. And I wanted to talk about some of these warrens and the kind of philosophy of them all and really tease out some of the themes, because I think it's absolutely fascinating. And the one in particular I want to look at is the one which is known as Cowslip's Warren, because each of these warrens have their own philosophy, their own worldview, which are distinct from one another. People will be like really familiar, I think, with General Woundwort and Ephrafa, which is the last warren they come to. But the first one that we see is Sandleford. And you can think of Sandleford Warren as being a kind of conservative, but it's a little bit stuffy. It's a little bit kind of rigid in its orthodoxy. And it can't adapt and it can't change. They don't listen to the warnings that the humans are going to destroy the warren. They stay put, and well, except for the rabbits that we follow, they all escape. And Sandleford's destroyed, and all of the rabbits in it are killed. And I think there's a warning there that we're not there for very long in the story. We don't dwell too long there. But straight away, you can see that he's doing something and he's got something to say beyond just, well, these are different warrens and they've got different leaders and all this, or they're in a different place. So they've actually got a different philosophy in each warren. And the message of Sandal Fadbaran is that if you can't adapt and you can't change, then you're going to become stagnant and you're going to be snuffed out by the winds of history, and the turning of the wheel of time will just destroy your civilization, is the message of Sandal Fadbaran. But it's certainly it's certainly not the worst by any means of the Warrens in Watership Down. And so the question then is, what is the worst Warren? Because I definitely think he's leaning into this. What is the worst Warren to live in Watership Down? What has the worst ideology? What the worst ethos? And normally, if you ask that question, everybody would immediately say Efrafa. Efrafa is the giant sort of Stalinist or fascistic authoritarian Warren with General Woundwort at the top of it. And when I was reading the book recently, I realized like that's just not the case. In actual fact, I think the first Warren they arrive at after Sandalfad, which is known as Cowslips Warren, or ominously the Warren of the Shining Wire, that is easily the worst of the Warrens they arrive at. As for the in the book, as we approach Cowslips Warren, it's made very clear that this is bizarrely a place in where there's doesn't seem to be any predators. There doesn't seem to be any danger at all, in fact. There's even cartridges which suggests that the farmers have been shooting birds, perhaps birds of prey. There's no signs of dogs. There's no signs of any foxes. And what's more is that the rabbits are allowed to freely wander through the fields and even graze. And then when we actually get to the warren itself, which is under the trunk in the root system of a huge old oak, they meet the rabbits that are at Cowslip's warren, including Cowslip himself. And the rabbits are all very large, very well fed, but they've also got a kind of pretentious and aristocratic way about them. They are a kind of like a bohemian elite, and they speak with a very clipped accents, but they're also extremely passive and sort of nonchalant about the world around them. They just take it for granted. They're not amazed at all that they've somehow come to inhabit this wonderful warren, which is free of predators and which seems to have a never-ending supply of food, which just appears for them. And they while away their hours singing songs and doing poetry. But it's a little bit odd because it's not really rooted in the mythos and in the religion of the other rabbits. In Watership Down, and this is important for later as well, in Watership Down, there's a god which is the sun called Frith. And according to the mythology that the rabbits have told themselves, there was once a prince rabbit called El-Harar. But he was a little bit uppity. He was a little bit too cheeky. He got above his station. He was too arrogant. And it was decided that Frith would punish him. And what happened basically was that the rabbits were put at the very bottom of the food chain. All of the world will be your enemy. And in that way, we will knock out some of the arrogance and the hubris from the rabbit species. And that's what they did. They were granted the ability to see far and run fast, but they were at the bottom of the food chain. That was the punishment. And so all of the world is a danger to a rabbit. And again, Adams plays around with this constantly throughout the book. In the case of Cowslip's Warren, though, there doesn't seem to be any danger at all, at least from the natural world. But what's more than that is that when they talk about culture, they no longer have any kind of references towards their own religion. So you've got these somewhat pompous, aloof rabbits who have the airs and graces of an elite, but they don't face any danger. They've disconnected themselves from their own sort of metaphysical essence and the religion and tradition, and they live for no other reason than to eat and be comfortable. And the rabbit Fiver, who has the visions, immediately gets bad vibes from this. There's something not right. And also, sort of materially, it should be paradise, yet the way Adams writes it, it isn't. He writes it, he with the words are sort of imbued with foreboding and death. And one of the examples is that he has one of the rabbits say, the other rabbits who are native there, they all seem terribly sad. They put me in mind of trees in November. And then the root system, which goes above the warren and forms the ceiling of the warren, he describes it as if the ceiling was made of bones. And so, despite this place being superficially safe, which is not doesn't happen very often, water shut down, it's actually it's got the stink of death around it. And what it is that it's a trap. And Cowslip knows it is. And one of the other things that I picked up just reading the book was that Cowslip is constantly dodging questions. The other rabbits, the main character rabbits that we follow, are asking them how this place came to be. And Cowslip won't give a direct answer to anything. He's just evasive and doesn't want to get into it. And in fact, none of the rabbits who dwell in this warren, Cowslip's warren, will give a direct answer to anything, and they won't question anything, nor will they talk about the past or the future or anything relating to offspring or family or kin or anything. So the rabbits are all strangely alone in this warren, which should be paradise. And the reason for all of this is that the perimeter is completely surrounded by snares. It's all a trap. It's a lie. It's a big lie. And Cowslip and the rabbits who live there know it is. So Cowslip's warren has basically embraced a fatalism and a nihilism where they have sold their souls. They'll be taken care of. They'll have all of the creature comforts, but they will routinely be caught in a snare and die horribly, or they then also have to trick other rabbits into joining their warren because then they increase the numbers and there's less likely of them being caught in a snare the more rabbits there is. But obviously, they can't reveal the dark secret at the heart of it all. And this also explains why Adams has wrote it in this way that he has, where it's this sort of dread which just saturates almost every sentence that he writes about this, whereas on the surface, it should be fine. And they even have their own gloomy poetry, which is all about sort of being swept away down the streams and not having any agency, accepting your fate. So they've neglected their own religion. They've rejected Frith, and they've accepted and embraced comfort, but that death could arrive at any moment. And it's just this completely nihilistic existence which the other rabbits cotton onto eventually, but only when it's been built up quite a lot that this place is one gigantic lie. And I thought this is probably the worst of these warrens because it saps away at the soul and it creates a situation. And I also think it's the one that resembles our world that we are in the most, because it's as if people have become so passive that horror and outrage are just met with a sort of shrug of the shoulders. This is the darkest vision of Adam's book, in my opinion. But somebody who was more liberal would view it as Ephrafa, but we're going to come there in a moment. And I also think when I read the book that the Warren that most reflects modern day Britain is Cowslip's Warren. It's the acceptance of death, basically, and the rejection of all transcendence and all meaning, in fact, because there's no meaning at all in Cowslip's Warren. It's just completely void. What you can do is fill your belly and hope that you're next in the snare. But I think it's interesting to contrast this with the other, perhaps the most famous Warren of Watership Down, which is the famous Ephrafa. So easily and by far the largest Warren in Watership Down is Ephrafa, and it's ruled by the tyrannical General Woundwort, who's huge and old. And there's a little bit of his backstory as well, that he originally escaped from a hutch, and he is so powerful and so large that he is alleged, the myth goes that he fought a fox and won one-on-one. And what he's done some time back in the lore is that he took over Ephrafa and made it his own and just kept conquering the nearby warrens until now he has it. Basically, it's been scaled up. And a lot of it is to do with mass and scale with General Woundwort at the top. So you can think of it almost like he's this Stalin figure or Hitler or something like that. And he has decided that the rabbits can... So he's got his own philosophy, which is that the rabbits, if they collectivize and they scale up and live as one gigantic complex with him at the top, of course, and he has captains, and you organize, then you can actually take rabbits off the bottom of the hierarchy. They can do something which they're, and Holly says this in the text, he was trying to do something that Frith never meant any rabbit to do, which was, in a way, to fight back and say, we won't be at the bottom of the hierarchy. Rabbits shall not be at the bottom of the food chain. And in order to kind of do that, he's created a brutal authoritarian police state. And it's not particularly charismatic, you know, he's not great at doing speeches. He's just hard and cunning and has created a kind of grinding bureaucratic monster for them all to live in. It's a typical sort of criticism of authoritarianism that we would have in the post-war era. And it's more commonly he is the main antagonist of the novel and the cartoon. But one of the things that I find fascinating about this is it as nihilistic or lacking in meaning as Cowslip's Warren? And I don't think it is. Because one of the things that we tend to see with these kind of authoritarian systems at scale is that they do have this dark energy to them. And in the case of General Woundwort's vision for Ephrafa, it's almost something Promethean or Faustian. Because if we go back to Frith the god, deciding that rabbits will be at the bottom of the food chain, General Woundwort has said, actually, no, we won't. Through iron will and organization, rabbits become an organized threat, a kind of dark rebellion against the divine limits imposed on the species. And as brutal and sadistic and cruel as that system is, it isn't lacking meaning. It isn't lacking a vision. There is something to that. There is something to the idea that we will no longer be prey. We are going to stand our ground through sheer force of numbers and an ability to endure and carry on we're not going to be the bottom of the food chain at all anymore. And the most famous scene, of course, is the end where General Woundwort actually tackles this giant savage dog, which in the cartoon, it's excellent. But you can see that that's just insane behavior for a rabbit. But that's the whole point. The vision is to say, we are going to transcend the limits which have been placed on us. And so he's almost in this Promethean defiance of God. And he's going to fight to the bitter end to transcend the limits which have been placed upon his kind. And this is, whether you like it or not, and whether it's cruel and whether it's brutal, it is a vision. Say what you want, it is an ethos. But it is, in my opinion, far, far less, it's grim and it's sacrilegious within the context of the world. But it isn't as horrifying as the void and the abyss represented by Cowslips Warren. And I remember thinking of this when you see old clips of the Soviet Union and the industrialization. There is a kind of grim, dark energy to it, a dynamism to it, even though, you know, it's caterpillar tracks crunching on dead bones and millions of people being used as ballast and canals and all of the horror and the gore. There is a logic to it. There is a meaning to it. Even if we don't agree with it or appreciate it, there's something there. But the Warren that I find most reflects our world isn't actually that. Despite all of the kind of the ruminations on a police state and all the rest of it, it's actually the nihilistic one. It's the one where you just accept horror because you've got a full belly, because you can adopt the airs and graces of an elite, even though it isn't earned, even though you've done nothing to warrant any kind of high status. You kind of just inherit it because of what's been given to you that you never worked for. And so this is seems to be like the fumes of where we are, in, I would say across the West, but in particular Britain. Whereas you can look at the grim tyranny of the gulag system and the regimented ranks of General Woundwort's Ephrafa, and you can at least see that it has meaning and energy to it. I mean, it's even the way Adams writes it, the prose that he uses changes as well. So when he gets to Ephrafa, the prose becomes regimented, the sentences become shorter, as if it's like orders being barked, whereas there's a kind of misty, ethereal sort of gloom to when he's the use of language during the Cowslip Warren phase. In the post-war era, and I think this probably did inform Adams himself and his writing, we've been told in the West that that kind of authoritarianism with a leader, a great leader at the top, and you all subordinate your will to a greater vision for society. We've been told that that is kind of evil incarnate, and people grumble about the authoritarianism that we have. But really, you know, what we have is this kind of hyper-individualism where everybody is sort of encouraged to be a world unto themselves. But then beyond that, that everybody is interchangeable and that everybody is also their own individual islands. And so this gives the kind of the paradoxical logic that you can just ship in people from all over the world. Everybody can be brought in to enjoy the emptiness, the abyss that has no identity, no meaning to it, just like Cowslips Warren, where they entice others to come in just to flesh out the numbers, but nobody really cares or has any affinity towards anybody except feeding their bellies and material comfort. And in this kind of weird way, whether he meant it or not, I don't think he did, but I think Watership Down and Adams reveals that actually there are worse things than having an authoritarian leader with making a society which has an actual purpose. what you can have is a kind of fatalism without any reason to exist or any way to justify itself. And that's why I think Cowslips Warren is the worst of it all. Is it better to defy the gods in some kind of grandiose project, or just accept raw emptiness? And it seems to me that, like, in England, away from how lovely it's portrayed in Adam's writing, this is increasingly what's demanded of us. It's demanded that you don't pay attention to the daily horrors and the daily gore and the rising tide of violence and rape and misery. Because, well, as the saying goes, how does this affect you personally? And it's quite the thing to look back on Adam's work, which is so wonderful and has so much to it, and think, yeah, after when it all is said and done, I'd prefer to live in the authoritarian police state with order and with vision than whatever this is, this kind of nihilistic supermarket where everybody is just a unit waiting for the snare to be placed around their necks. Just some thoughts there, folks. Thanks for listening, and I'll catch you later.